Well, I see that there aren't too many people who will admit to being seniors. They forgot to come, right? But I am a senior and proud of it. So we have been so blessed. The president of the seniors division on the national level is with us today. And we're going to, I'll let you clap for her for real in just a minute. We're going to give the microphone to her, and she's going to tell us something about what a senior division can do. I was wondering the same thing. His back is hurting him real badly, so he's on the floor. And we had a, so he can lie on the floor. And so he asked me to go ahead and get things going, and then in a little while, he'll get up off the floor. Didn't I just see you at a table in the exhibit hall? Okay. All righty. Well, so, friends, it is with pleasure that I introduce the president of our national seniors division, Ruth Sager.
Yay!
Here, I'm going to just hand, I think I am going to hand you this. Okay. If you can't reach it,
scoot over.
Okay.
I can't reach it.
Okay.
Scoot over. One chair.
I know. Scoot over, Carl.
We're switching mics here. Okay. Wait, it's caught on the table.
Okay. It may be caught. It may not be able to go any further.
Hello.
Okay, I got to scoot over some more, I think. It's okay, wait, let me move the chair because it's not going to reach. Okay.
All right, I think it'll work right now. Well, thank you so much. I'm really honored to be here. I've known Carl and Mindy for many years, and Mindy and I have sort of worked together with seniors a little bit. I have known that she has worked with seniors, and I would call her up and ask her some advice, and she would call me up sometimes, and we talk about different things. So we had a good collaboration, and I'm delighted to be here. Last session, we kind of talked about groups and divisions and that sort of thing, and the difference. And some people say, "Well, why do we need a senior division in the National Federation of the Blind?" I don't know when it started. It started a long, long time ago. I was in the Federation in the 80s, and I think it existed at least as a group. I don't know when it became a division. I have been president since 2012, and I'm very fortunate to have a wonderful board of people to work with. We find that there are issues that we have as seniors, and some of them are, how do we find services that we need now as a senior that maybe we didn't really require before, and how can we access them? How do we learn about them? And then there are seniors who are new to vision loss, and how do we reach out to those people and help them establish a new way of life and give them some support and help them advocate for the things that they need and be their teachers and mentors? So those are the two basic groups, I think, of seniors these days. We want to address both issues. On a national level, we have conference calls, and usually we've had them in the spring, starting in February or March up until the convention, and they're held monthly, and they're on specific topics. We've had people from many, many states, including Alaska and Hawaii and everything in between. People participate. And some people just call in and listen, and that's fine too, because it depends upon where you are in this journey of living with low vision and blindness. And sometimes very good suggestions are given and techniques and new products are talked about. And sometimes it just reaffirms to people what they're doing is okay and it's fine. So we've had topics talking about independence and cane travel. We've talked about learning Braille. And sometimes people ask, well, what is it? And we have that discussion, explaining what Braille is and how it could be useful and those types of things. We've had a financial advisor talk about keeping track of your finances after losing vision when you're not able to read as you did before, so what methods might be useful. We've talked about organizing and keeping track of information and getting information from the people around you that's really helpful. How do you direct some people? And you know, sometimes that's a challenge because a lot of times some folks want to tell you how to do things. Well, you should do this, you should do that, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. And you have to advocate and be the one to explain what's really helpful to you. And that can be a challenge. And sometimes family members are that challenge because they don't want to really listen. You know, they think they know what you should do, or they know what they want you to do, but it may not be what you want to do. And then learning about services that are available. And sometimes they're little things, but they can make a difference in a person's life. For example, my in-laws are well into their 90s, and they live in their house. Right now, my son is their care provider. But they found out that they don't have to take the trash out to the curb anymore, that they can leave it up by the house. And that's a service that's available to them. And for them, that's a good alternative because they shouldn't be lugging the trash out to the curb anymore. They have balance issues and are both using walkers. So sometimes there are services available that, unless we look into them, we're not sure how to access them and if they're available and how to go about doing that. So sharing this information can be helpful. We have, besides the conference calls which occur, we also, for the past several years at the National Convention, have hosted different seminars. And my board usually comes up with some ideas and things that they would like to do. So they, we try to vary it. We've had discussion groups about how to start support groups and divisions in the states. How do we motivate seniors in your state, in your local area? How do we play games and interact with the public? And we played games and bingo a couple of years ago. This past seminar was on the in the day of a life of a newly blind senior, where we focused on adaptive methods that we might use that are important for seniors to develop when your vision changes and you need to develop a new method for doing things. So that was this past year's seminar. So we try to vary it so that we have some learning in our seminar, and then in our annual meeting, which we have at the National Convention as well. This past year, we focused on telling people about the Helen Keller Center has a program for using adaptive technology for telephones and other telecommunications equipment. So they spoke about that. And then we had several people speak about what they're doing in their states. The Colorado Center for the Blind has a retreat once a year, and they have produced a DVD called Seniors in Charge, which explains what they do on their retreat and how helpful it is. And we initiated, and we had to cancel, but we're still going to do this. We initiated a retreat on a national basis. We were going to use the Rocky Bottom facility, which is in South Carolina. It is a former 4-H camp that the South Carolina affiliate has owned for many, many, many years, and they've changed it and adapted it and added on to it. And so we had a place to hold our retreat. But we needed about 15 people to sign up to make it viable, and we didn't have that many by the time we needed them. So we're going to do better advertising and see if we can get the numbers up. But our goal, or my goal really, is to provide seniors with basic training so that whether you're a newly blind senior or you've been blind all your life but maybe need to adapt and learn some new technologies, or just, you know, regain strength learning the skills that you already had, to be able to have choices and decide how you want to spend the rest of your life and adapting to those changes. Because, you know, each decade that we live, we might have to have new changes. Right now, we might be able to hear quite well, but as we age, maybe some of us will experience significant hearing loss. And then some of those talking aids won't be as user-friendly as they are right now. So we have to keep adapting and changing and sometimes creating some new technologies or some new methods that are going to work to meet the needs that we have. So I'm hoping to be able to have some retreats for people. I think the retreat is viable economically, but more importantly, I think what it does in a short period of time, it introduces people to the can-do philosophy of the National Federation of the Blind. It gives people a network of people, a support system, and it helps people to really take charge and help seniors make decisions that they have the ability to make changes in their lives in a way that's useful to them, no matter what their family or friends think. So, you know, one of the misconceptions that people have is that you have to be totally blind, let's say, before you use a cane, and that's just not true. Or a dog guide. You know, they can learn to use these tools and learn to be use them well and have some vision, but yet they need to make the adaptions and changes. There are other things as well. I think the notion that technology is for people working is not an idea that's useful anymore. Technology is not a luxury, it's a necessity. So if we want to communicate with the medical profession, if we want to communicate with Medicare, if we want to communicate with city officials, if we want to communicate with local people or the grandchildren or whoever it is we want to do that with, we need some forms of technology to help us do that, just like everybody else is using. And along with that, we need the training that goes with it. If you're going to give a person some technology that's unfamiliar, they have to have basic training. And we know how to help people get the training or do the training. But we need to work with state agencies so that they will provide the technology and help us provide some of the training that goes along with it so that people can use it effectively and efficiently and make a difference in their lives. Those are, I think, the basic things that I think the senior division can focus on. We've had a discussion also on dealing with medical professionals, because many, many times they just make assumptions like somebody else is going to take care of you. And you, the senior these days, there's a huge percentage of seniors, number one, that are taking care of their aging parents, and number two, they're often caring for grandchildren at the same time. So you end up being sometimes a caregiver for different multiple generations, and being able to negotiate everyone's needs can be very challenging. So I think we provide support to one another, and we look for solutions and pass information. I think that's what the senior division can do and should be doing. So are there any questions or comments from folks out there? I could hear from you.
Please say your name.
Right.
David
Stair. Wait, we'll give you a microphone. There's another microphone up
yeah,
there.
Yeah, there's one right here.
Okay, you pass that to him. Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, he's got one.
Okay. As some of you know, I'm fighting cancer at this point. Fortunately, it's under control, but my daughter's had me get one of these pendants that you put around your neck, mm-hmm. and then when it decides to go off, it says, fall detected, calling operator. Well, I went out last Monday night, and I set the pendant down, and I get home, and I get a message that the stupid thing went off, and the police came to my house, and I wasn't there. And I called the company up, and they said, okay, we'll send you another one. So they sent me another, and then I call up to have it acted. Well, they said, you have to read us the serial number on the back of the pendant. I said, I can't do that. I can't see the stupid thing.
Right.
Well, and that I'd gotten three of them, and they'd never asked me before. So I said, well, I can't do it. Am I supposed to have call somebody sighted and have them come over to read the serial number on the back of the pendant so that you can be sure that you sent the right one? Yes, says the lady. So, two questions. One, is my daughter still want me to wear the thing? And my question is there a company that, one, treats the person who has the pendant like a human being, and two, has more accessibility? Because I asked this company if they would email me when they were going to update, and they said, well, we can only email the people on your list.
It was. Oh, there it goes. Okay. I don't know offhand, but that, you know, be something to investigate. And it also would be something to document, because if we don't document this, things like this to the companies, they aren't going to change either. I mean, they have no motivation unless we can document that, you know, what the issues are.
I've done that. Thank you.
Okay. Good, yeah, day. But that's a start. I mean, I'm not saying it's a whole solution, but looking into, you know, this issue of the technology. Because you're right. Just because you have the technology is, you know, that's part of it. But the human part of it is still there too. And sometimes they don't coordinate very well, right? We all have that experience in some things. It's supposed to do this, and it often does not. Are there any other questions or? Okay, Margo, a microphone.
Yeah, I got it. One fear, I guess I'm going to say that I have, I guess it's a fear, is going, I'm probably going to have a knee replacement sometime kind of soon. And that could mean, you know, going to the hospital for a few days and having surgery. And that's okay. And then maybe going to rehab and maybe having physical therapy and things like that. My fear is, because I've known of blind people who have gone to rehab centers and not been allowed to walk around by themselves, who have not been allowed to have the physical therapy they really needed, and partly because people didn't think blind people walked around and got off our butts anyway. And so I guess I have that, I've seen blind people not treated well at many of these centers, and some in the hospital too. So I guess I'm just venting here.
No, I think that's a valid concern. I would really talk to your orthopedist, the surgeon, and say just what you said. And if he puts, or she or he, whoever, they may have to put some things in writing in advance, you know, to the hospital team, because it's really the doctor that controls a lot of that. And so you need to really speak with that medical person and the medical team and make certain that that you're, if you're supposed to get, I don't know, however much physical therapy and so much time, that you actually get it and that you do have, you know, the ability to walk and to practice and do what you need to have done. Because you're right that many times they'll do the bare minimum and they think that's good enough.
They also, this is Margo again, they also, mm-hmm. I know of blind people who, and this is kind of an offshoot of my first venting, mm-hmm. as blind people living in senior places, assisted living or independent senior, whatever, and the staff at those facilities don't even want them to walk to the bathroom by themselves or walk around by themselves. And I have this fear of being suddenly in one of these places and having, besides being trying to get over a knee replacement, whatever it is that I've got going on, and having to fight them too. And I guess that's just my other part of this. And I'm just kind of, I want to talk about it because it concerns me.
No, I think it's justified. My husband had a knee replacement, and he did not have to go to, he had to do physical therapy, but it was close to our home. It was only about a mile and a half from our house. And so he could stay at home because we were on, our house is one story. It's all, he could walk. There were no steps or anything. And he was able then to go to physical therapy, you know, the 3-4 times a week, whatever was required. So you might ask about those, you know, are there any other than going to a facility? Yeah, okay.
I have a facility right across the street, mm-hmm. and my apartment is one floor, and there's two steps to get to it, but I think those would probably be kind of manageable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is Diane Jordan.
Okay, Diane. Get a microphone.
Okay. Whatever facility you go to for rehab, I think maybe you need to visit them. Mm-hmm. You need to have some contact with them and find out what their philosophy is. And I think that it's a responsibility of us to contact these facilities and see if we can do in-service. These are problems that, like you say, as time goes by, we have to deal with. And we have to find some solutions. And one of the solutions may be to offer them some training because they just may not know or have many people who have been at the facility who are blind or visually impaired, mm-hmm. so that they need to be educated. I think that's part of what we need to do is to educate people.
Yeah.
Okay, Mindy?
Do you want this much? Yeah, thanks. You know what, the other thing that I have noticed in working with people is they don't really know what they need because they don't know what they could possibly be doing. So that's one of the things that we have to be really aware of and really be able to educate them, because they can't imagine that they could go down the street to the coffee shop by themselves because, you know, they're blind.
So it is a kind of a twofold problem. We're dealing with, you know, those of you who haven't made some adaptions and know how to travel and you've got your ways of doing things that have worked for you for years, and then the newly blind person who may not have the same abilities because they're dealing with aging and blindness is a new thing for them. So I think, you know, that's something you could do locally, is to go to different facilities and educate people and talk about the difference between you know, making your adaptions earlier in life and then talking about how people make adaptions later in life and how those might somewhat be different. But that, you know, that they need to speak with each individual because the needs can be different. And then, you know, the other issue I've seen is that in nursing facilities and so forth, the blind person may adapt very well, but there may be, you know, there are other people with other disabilities. So again, hearing might be a problem, and the person who's using the walker and has significant hearing problems isn't going to know that the blind person is behind them. So it gets, you know, it's not so simple, actually. And the staffs, you know, they're not often paid a great deal, and the turnover rate is extremely high, even with the top staff. Many, many times I've established a relationship with the activities coordinator and the director, and, you know, the next time I go there, it's different people entirely. So it's an ongoing process to educate people.
And Ruth, yes. We need to understand. I remember years ago, I forget the last time we were in New Orleans, mm-hmm. but I remember the lady addressed us there. She was a polio survivor. Mm-hmm. And she said, how many of you out there are blind? Yay. And she said, now, just because you have one disability doesn't mean you're immune to the others.
Right.
I'm dealing with right now with some age-related hearing loss. I mean, I can still hear you if you talk loud enough. But I have to come to terms with using some of the adaptive techniques that people with hearing loss use. And I'm resisting that. And Mindy said to me, look, you lecture people on using the white cane all the time. Let me lecture you on using a hearing aid. So she did.
There you go. Right. And then there could be, you know, people who have diabetic retinopathy. And the more I read about it, the more I've learned. It would almost be sometimes like walking on stilts, because people, if they really have no sensitivity in their feet, are not going to feel what's underneath them in the same way that a person would. If, you know, when you're just walking with your shoes, you can tell a great deal of the surface that you're walking on. But there can be conditions that really make a difference and impede what a person can do. And so adapting to these issues is challenging. And there's not one answer. Being open and experimenting and finding out what might be the best solution. You know, we talk a lot about using the white cane, and we should, and getting people to use a support cane for support because they actually need it, and the white cane for finding obstacles, and yet it is doable for many people. It's cumbersome, no doubt about it, but it does keep them safer than to use the support cane as the long white cane. Or, you know, and then the other issue is walkers, and it's difficult. I don't have the expertise to know when a person can and cannot use a walker. That's for an orthopedic specialist or someone in physical therapy to decide. I can give them some suggestions about using a walker and a white cane, but that again is an awkward situation. And sometimes I'm telling people, you know, you make choices. Sometimes the wheelchair is the best option. Sometimes the cane and the support cane might work, you know, depending upon what you're doing and how you're doing it. There's never going to maybe be one solution that's going to be the best for you. It may depend really on the event that you're doing, that you're want to be involved in.
David
Stayer. David. Thank you. I go to visit my daughter in Rhode Island at least twice a year. And when I go, I take my wheelchair because I know that there is no way that they have a hill that's 3 blocks long, mm-hmm. and there's no way I'm going to walk it. Mm-hmm. So when I'm there, I use the wheelchair. And some of you may remember last year when I was at convention, I had a wheelchair with me. Baruch Hashem, I'm walking around right now. But the point is that I've had to adapt. When this first happened, my daughter said to me, the hardest thing you're going to have to do is to understand that you need the help, because they said to me, you're so used to helping other people that you're going to have to learn to accept the help yourself and start doing things that you've told other people to do because they needed to, and now you have to do them yourself. And that's been the hardest part of adjusting to this for me.
Mm-hmm. I did think... I don't know in New York what you have, but in Maryland we do have something called Maryland TAP, Maryland Technical Assistance Program, and they basically offer, you know, technology, and you can get it for a reduced rate, or not a reduced rate, but you can get a loan from them at low interest. But our agency now has other things, and they do have things on loan, such as a ramp and some other pieces of equipment. So I don't know in New York if your agency does that kind of thing, but sometimes looking into those things that you may need on a sort of temporary basis. Like you say, if you're having a knee replacement, you know, maybe a little ramp to go up those two steps or whatever can be helpful. I broke my foot a few years ago, and I bought online a little ramp just to get from my porch into the house because it was kind of a steep step. And it didn't cost all that much, and I bought it. And for getting from the driveway up to the porch, we just bought a piece of sturdy plywood, and that seemed to work. So sometimes you can, you know, find solutions like that too. But find out what I don't know what your agency is called, but they may have other things that can be helpful that aren't necessarily technology. Our agency also has things like it looks like a mop kind of, but it has magnets at the end in case you drop certain things, you know, like paper clips or stuff. You can swish it around and pick them up that way rather than bending down. So, you know, until you have a disability, sometimes you're not aware, as Mindy said, of all the different things that can be helpful and useful to deal with that disability. So educating yourself about those little things can make they can make a big difference sometimes.
I'm Leona from Buffalo, New York, mm-hmm. and I had a back problem recently. Mm-hmm. I went to a physical therapist and with my white cane, mm-hmm. and they sat me down and said, you know, we're kind of sorry that we can't treat you because we have 7 or 8 clients per therapist. And I saw the activity there, and it was active. I thought, oh, I could just take one little bump from somebody. So I said, well, I'm not going to contest that. It's your liability and my health. And they gave me a list of other practitioners. Mm-hmm. So I called one. Someone else had said, oh, they'd been to this one. So I called and explained my situation, and they said, yes, we will treat you. You just come in, and we've done this for seniors before. So I guess a word to the wise, if you're anticipating some of this, check out your physical therapy first to see if they will take seniors who are blind or near blind and what other services you would need with them before you end up being rejected.
I wonder, do you know, Ruth, if that's legal? I mean, can a facility say that, you know, that they can't take you because you're blind?
Well, I don't know that they could say that because you're blind, but I think they could say it on numbers, you know, something like that. They would get around it that way. Because when I broke my foot, I did call one place, and they said, we're full up for the next 6 months, period. They weren't taking anybody, you know. But I would also say you're right. If you can get a therapist on a one-to-one, that's ideal. But the smaller numbers, because you know what? They're observing how you're moving, and you aren't always aware of how you're moving in space. I mean, none of us are. And so the more they can observe, the better they can tailor your therapy to best meet your needs. And if you're in a big crowd and there's a lot of people, they aren't going to give you a lot of attention, and therefore you might not benefit from the therapy like you would if you had smaller numbers. So that's true too. I was fortunate. I went to a place and they had, I don't know, 4 or 5 therapists, but they also would give me a student in training. And that was good because this person was eager to practice what they had learned, and I really benefited greatly because I almost had one-on-one instruction with this person. So if I wavered a little bit, she was right there to say, lift up with that arm better, do this, do that, whatever. And my therapy was wonderful because of that. Had I just gone to, you know, a general place, I might have been able to follow the directions, but I might not have benefited as I did.
Um,
When it comes to, a lot of times what happens is, too, that the agency or the place that you're going, they have some limitations based on the insurance coverage. I mean, if something were to happen to you and they allowed you to do certain things, their insurance would not cover it. I know I started attending a church recently, and when I called, they picked me up. So when I called, they started telling me all these things they had to do, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know, I'm pretty independent. So I did go in, and they talked to me, and they said a lot of the limitations they had was because of their insurance coverage. And sometimes we had to respect that.
Are they a registered place? Because a registered place...
No, I'm talking about just going to church.
Oh.
But I'm saying even when you go to a hospital facility or whatever, they have insurance. And sometimes their insurance sets some limitation for certain people. Mm-hmm. You know? So sometimes you have to take that in consideration, too, of what's going on there.
Well, that might be something to investigate, certainly. But I don't know that one can discriminate, like Mindy said, just because you're blind. You know what I mean? So, I don't know if you always do. I mean, I think there's a kind of a fine line there to see, because if they can discriminate, they will sometimes, you know. And I mean, for example, we were talking about insurance, and if you get long-term insurance for care, if you need intensive care, those companies do not want to insure people with a disability. And to me, that is very discriminatory. But they are allowed to do it, and they do it. So it's very difficult to get long-term life insurance for long-term care if you have to be in a facility. I don't know if anybody's tried to get it, but I've known several blind people, and me included, were not able to get it, or not able to get it in the same rate, comparable at all with a sighted person with basic the same health issues and the same age and so forth. So it can be an issue. So I think part of this meeting was also to discuss whether you wanted to form a group and, you know, come together on a maybe more consistent basis in some way, whether you do it via phone conference or whether you have meetings or have some projects, you know, to work towards. I'd be happy to work with you in any way that I can. And I think you brought up some issues that might be important to address and maybe find some solutions and answers to.
Sounds to me like we have the need, Ruth.
Yes. You know.
Would others agree?
All right. Given that, should we, I think it might be in order to elect officers for the group. Is that a...
Okay. If it's a group, you don't need officers, you can have them. If it's a division, you do need them, so we might have to decide.
Okay. All right. So what I just heard was Ruth said, if it's a group, we don't need officers. If it's a division, we do. And then on the other side, Carl said, let's move toward a division. Okay. Okay, Dr. Mara,
yeah,
we'll
have to draft one of those too. You're right, sir.
There are models, aren't there?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, you could adapt. That would be easy to do.
Okay. Okay, so Carl, I'm going to give you the mic and let you take it from here.
I've got it right here.
Okay, go right ahead.
Well, let's do an interest finder, first of all. Call out your name. Mindy can take your information down if you're interested in at least a group, and we could eventually move from a group to a division. Like Dr. Mara says, we need a constitution and officers and the like, and that's not something we're prepared to do this afternoon. However, I think it's something we do need to move towards. But if you're interested in forming at least a group, Go ahead and talk to me. Or talk to Mindy.
I don't have my device with me. I'm
oh, Mindy doesn't have a note taker with her.
Do you want me to go and get it?
Okay.
Okay.
David Stair, I'm willing.
Yes, David.
I'm willing to be part of this.
Okay.
Okay, we do have.
And
the
you
ability.
Have my information, right?
Yep.
Okay, I'll write names in there.
Okay, that's great. David Stair. Okay.
Diane Jordan.
Diane, good. Good.
Margot Downey.
Margot.
Mindy, you have my information, right?
Oh, so. Yeah.
That's Margo Downey.
I can get it, Diane. Yeah.
Yeah, because she's forgotten.
Okay.
What else? Do we need other people?
Let's see if we have other interested people.
Okay, are there other now? Right now,
yes, POBC it's, officers.
It's look. Oh, thank God. It's looking like then that we have three people, plus of course Carl and myself. So there are five people. Is there anyone else interested in being a part of this group? That's Ray Wayne and Felicia.
Oh, no, I was just saying I'm interested in being.
Okay, and Felicia, what's your last name?
Karasaszczyk.
Could you spell it, please?
KarasaszczyK.
Got it.
Okay, great. I'm glad you're taking it down. Okay, great. Great. Thank you. And anyone else?
Did you get me?
Did indeed. Thank you. Oh, that was Ray Wayne. Did you get it?
Yeah, yes, I
thought so.
Yes.
Okay, anyone else? Okay. Well, that's good. That gives us a start. Who's that in the back? There's somebody in the back.
I know there are people around the convention who could be interested, too. So we'll be talking about this over the weekend as well.
And okay, now my suggestion to Carl was that we have a monthly meeting by phone in which we take it further and discuss what we would like to do, what directions we would like to go in. Oh, my gosh, my backpack with my device appeared.
Oh.
It just appeared. Well, I'm going to let you continue because you got the file.
Right.
And then you can just, yeah. Okay. Wow, that was magic. Okay. So that was what we were thinking in terms of. How does that sound to you? Yeah. All right. What
we can get specific on dates and stuff when we get home.
Well, but I wonder if we shouldn't just get a starting date that we can.
Well, we need to coordinate with the blind parents because they have a Sunday call, fourth Sunday, and you know POBC has another one. So let's coordinate.
Okay. Makes me nervous, but we can do that. I always prefer to have to leave a meeting with a. Something solid.
Could we have just a general starting date, and if we have to change it, well, let's have a general starting date, and if we have to revisit it, we can, but I'd like to leave this meeting with a date.
Okay.
I feel that way, too.
Yeah.
So I know that on the fourth Sunday of the month, the Blind Parents Division is meeting. How would you guys feel about meeting on the second Sunday? Of the month.
That sounds fine.
Okay, 7 o'clock?
Seven Eastern, something like that.
We start to peter out after a certain hour.
Yeah, about midnight if I know you. Yeah.
We'll all be falling asleep.
All right. Is that a good time? Is that, you know, speak to us. Seven for on the second Sunday of the month, which will be the third, 10th. Yes, December 10th?
I think so, yeah.
All right, we're good. Good with that. Okay. Friends, I'm looking forward to this. I think we can do some fun things and very serious
and some beneficial things too.
We haven't established a frame of communication with each other besides the monthly meeting. I'm talking about, you know, other things that are going on or, you know, ongoing meetings that we can communicate. How are we going to communicate to everybody? Are we going to start a listserv? Are we going to have a telephone tree? Or a telephone tree of some sort? I don't know.
Let me ask...
Does everybody who mentioned their name have email? Does anybody not have email?
Yes.
Okay, so we don't want to leave people out.
Okay. So why don't we do a telephone tree then? Let me think. You know what? What we can do... having gotten everybody's information, is for the first call, I would volunteer to call everyone and remind us all about the meeting. And at that point, in that meeting, we can make some decisions about the media that we're going to use and all that. Does that work for you, Margo? Absolutely. So it'll be some kind of a phone thing, but we can talk about how we want to do it. Is somebody calling for the floor?
No.
Okay. So that would be on the 10th. We can talk about that.
We'll need to know how to call in and everything.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, when I call you, I will let you know that. Okay. Any other? Okay. Looks like we're on our way, friends.
Ruth, I want to thank you so much for facilitating
here.
This.
Yes.
What I said is that, Ruth, I wanted to thank you for facilitating this for us.
Well, thank you, and we can work then. So when you have your call, you could maybe have a model constitution and go from there, you know. So then that would be helpful, if that's helpful. All right, and I'll be happy to be on the call if you'd like. Okay.
Great.
I should say we do have NFB listserv on seniors, NFBnet-seniors. So there is a listserv also with NFBnet, and there is a senior webpage as well. Okay, so once you get your folks going, and you might want to join that webpage as well. And you're always welcome to be on the listserv.
Great.
Okay? So wonderful. Glad to work with you. And delighted to be here. Thank you very much.
Delighted to have had you.
Thank you.